Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Group Answers Podcast, episode 77. I am Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt.
What's up, Brian?
And we are live, kind of. But we are remote.
We're remote. If you can tell the difference, we did this during the Southern Baptist Conference. We took the mics out in the middle of the floor, and we liked it.
And we had Chris Swain on one of those shows, too, who was with Replicate.
Who's standing in the room right now.
Who is watching us. He's hovering.
Yes, he's browsing.
Pretending like he's looking at books.
He's browsing.
But we are live at the Lifeway Christian Store in lovely Fall Hendersonville, Tennessee.
This is your hometown, right?
Yeah, it's where I live. Hometown is, as you know, as we talk about often, it's in Western Kentucky.
That's true. But I mean,
but you wouldn't want to claim that. I mean, who wants to claim Western Kentucky?
Right.
No offense.
We don't have choices in those matters. I mean, it just happened. I can't deny that it happened.
I mean, home is where your heart is, and I'm hoping it's here.
Yeah.
Well, he's here. Robbie Gallaty is with us, joining us. Robbie, welcome back to the show, I should say.
Yeah. This is my favorite podcast. This is the podcast I've been on more than any other podcast.
He's our first three-peat, I think we said.
I think so, yeah. And he and Chris Swain, that we mentioned earlier, host an amazing podcast. It's also on our network, so it's a sister show, right? Isn't that what you would you would call it? And it's a, what's it called,
Making Robbie? Disciples.
Making Disciples.
Yep, Making Disciples.
So. Yeah, which, you know, we talk about groups. Obviously, you don't actually make disciples through groups, so we save that for their podcast.
No, I don't know about that. You've got to make disciples through groups as a part of it, golly. That's all part of the pathway.
That's true.
So you've been here, speaking of Hendersonville, you've been in the area now. Are you right at 4 years now?
Has it right been that long? Three years.
3 years. And was it about this time or was it summertime?
No, I came officially voted in September 20th.
So it's 2015. Yeah, it's right at 3 years.
Amazing, yeah.
And going great. You know, I talked to a lot of people in the community, and practically 100% of them are at Long Hollow.
Come on, I don't know about that. We do have a few,
I mean,
but I don't know.
I run into, they say, yeah, we know Robbie. Robbie's our pastor. Oh, good. Is he?
Well, that's encouraging. That's encouraging.
That is true. That is true.
So Robbie is radically saved in 2002, just by way of introduction. Robbie was mentored and discipled by former senior pastor of the church at Brook Hills, David Platt. And he completed his Master's of Divinity degree in expository preaching in 2007 and his, wait for it, PhD in preaching in 2011 from New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. Robbie, you are the founder of Replicate Ministries and the author of 7 books in addition to your pastoral leadership at Long Hollow Baptist Church that we just referenced. Robbie, you're married to Candy, also a co-author, right?
Yeah.
Just the two projects with Candy?
No, well, and Candy's first book's coming out by herself in February with B&H called Disciple Her. And she's had these ideas for years on discipleship, always been passionate about discipling women. But if you know, you guys know, in this field, there's not a lot of books by women for women on discipling women. Now, right. There's a lot of Bible studies and a lot of insights there, but I'm really excited about it. It's really a practical guide of using the word to disciple women. So, you know, the guys at B&H told me, my book on the kingdom of heaven is coming out. And I said, this is really a cruel joke by you guys. The same day, Chris, as her book, like February 15th, the same day. And they've already warned me. They said, listen, her book to women will outsell every book you've ever written. So you just need to be prepared. And I'm okay with that.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I'm curious, what's it like to write a book with your wife? Because I don't know that we could do that.
Well, it's funny. We both wrote the books at the same time. And it really got to the point where the kids, because you know how it is writing books. Well, you got to edit and you got to hit deadlines. And so one weekend we were down to the deadlines for both of our books and we just spent the whole weekend on the couch and the kids couldn't understand. Why are you both writing, you know, editing books? But anyway, we probably won't do that again. Probably not the best thing to do.
So your couch time, to go to the 5 love languages, is sitting on the couch editing your books.
Yeah, quality time on computers.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's probably not the best, but...
And 2 sons, you and Candy have Rig and Ryder. And also not here is Goat Farmer. So
yeah.
I don't know. I guess that's left off your official bio.
Yeah. I have 6 goats.
Is that and counting or did you start with 6?
No, I started with 4. We have 6 and we have 3 on the way.
Wow.
3 on the way. I have 4 sheep. I have 1 donkey. I have a Great Pyrenees and I have a duck named Louie.
Duck Tape Louie.
Well, you're on your way to your own live nativity.
You know what's funny is we took family pictures this year. We finally, after 2.5 years, got one of the family goats, you know, the family farm.
One of our frequent co-hosts is Brandon Hiltebeitel, and he is a self-proclaimed failed farmer.
Oh, wow.
They can't keep anything alive. Animals, crops.
What?
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
I learned everything on YouTube, so that's where you learn everything.
So before we get started, Robbie, with some of the just more discipling and more group-centric questions, apart from, you know, all the livestock that you have out there on the ranch, what's going on with Replicate, and what are you most excited about? You know, we always like to check up with you on the disciple-making task force and anything happening there.
Yeah, we are really excited. We actually tried to reshape our whole ministry at Replicate, where we've been trying to scale the ministry larger to reach more people, to really impact. Because if discipleship is going to become a movement, we have to move beyond having people come to us as the only disseminators of information. Meaning, if you can only learn how to make disciples in the church context like we do by only coming to the Nashville area to learn from us at a conference, we can only do so many conferences a year. Or if the only way you can learn is by us coming to your church and training, which we do time to time, but we only have 4 trainers. So eventually, like last year, all the training time got booked. And so what do you do when you don't have any more time? So we met with a guy who was a consultant for, he's a Christian out of Fellowship Bible Church in Arkansas. Mm. And he owns a big marketing kind of a structuring company for Vision. And what he said is, and he worked with like Domino's and Pizza Hut and Walmart. And he said, we've got to figure out how to use technology to scale the ministry where you can reach more people. So we're really excited. We're launching this January our first online cohort, where we're going to limit it to 100 people from all over the country. Instead of meeting once or twice a year, which we've done these cohorts before, it's very cumbersome. They have to travel, they have to get hotels, food, things like that. So what we did is we moved from 2 times a year to 24 times a year. So they're going to hear from me every month, live, fresh content on discipleship. So they'll spend an hour with me, 30 minutes of Q&A. Mm. Then they'll be assigned, Chris, which is really cool, to a coach. They're going to have a personal coach, a disciple maker who's done this in the field, done this in our church, who's going to coach them based on their area of ministry. So all the student guys will be together with our student coach. All the pastors of small to medium-sized churches will be with Tim LaFleur, who's pastored churches. Our next generation guy, our discipleship guy, will be in a cohort of discipleship guys. And then they'll be coached for 12 weeks. And we're really excited. We got a lot of excitement about it. It launches into December, January. So that's what we're really excited as we kind of move in 2019.
That's really cool. I love the online portion, but also adding a human element to it with the coach.
Yeah, and then we'll have a gathering once a year. We'll still have a gathering, probably just kind of have some FaceTime, but yeah, really excited about it.
That's good. I'd love to know, we joked earlier about discipleship doesn't happen in groups. We know that's not true, but I would love to know what you're learning as, you know, you've been at Long Hollow now for 3 years, about discipleship in groups. What's kind of becoming clear? What are you seeing? What are some of the things that are working, maybe not working with when it comes to groups?
So when I got to Long Hollow, we had predominantly on-campus groups, which were great. I mean, that's just what people are used to. Sunday school, and now they kind of put a new package on it. But the church I'm at now, you are limited. It doesn't matter what church you're at. You're limited by the space you have. The capacity is limited by the space you have. So as we expand, you have 2 options. You can either build a multi-million dollar building that you use once a week in our situation, or you can shift the strategy. So here's what we said. Based on our mission at Long Hollow, which is to reach our community, we exist to make disciples who then make disciple makers of all nations, in a sense. That's kind of the mission strategy. If that's going to take place, we have to mobilize people from coming to the church building once a week and show them ministry happens Monday through Saturday, not just on Sunday. So how do we do that? I gave our church this kind of a robust vision last March, and I said, what if we plant a life group in every neighborhood in Sumner County? So that, and you know as well as that's what's so cool about you guys. I mean, you're showing us that groups and community happens not just on campus, but in relationship and groups. And so what could happen if now people who are not likely or least likely to come to a church service, you know, 20 years ago, I say this all the time, 30 years ago, you could preach a good sermon, you can have great music, and you could open the church doors and people come to your church. Why? Because it's the American Christian thing to do. Mm-hmm. We are beyond that now. People don't wait. Lost people don't wake up and say, I think I'll go to church today. They just won't. They just don't do that. Mm. But they will come to your house. They will come and see you at the mailbox. They will see you for a cookover. They will come to your living room. So what we said is this. What if we launch a life group in every neighborhood in our community? 185 neighborhoods right now. Probably more, as Brian knows. He lives here. Just expanding every day. 185 neighborhoods. When we started this initiative, we were in 41 neighborhoods back in 2015 when I got here. We kind of did it behind the scenes, 2016, 2017. 2018, we launched it. We are now in 101 neighborhoods in Sumner County. And now you think about this. These are now ministry centers, if you will, where the saints are now equipped to do the work of ministry. And it's not lecture student, like I think you guys promote. It's more of sitting in circles, not rows, and here's what's so cool. You probably say, well, I don't have enough leaders to lead that. Well, if you have a lecture student model where it's all teaching and there's no assimilation or application, then you only have a select few group of people who could do that, right? But if you have a facilitation model where you're not just lecturing, but you're empowering people based on the sermon. So we do sermon-based life groups. I could talk about that if you want. Just really a big conviction of mine of why we do this. And I've got some Old Testament and New Testament evidence from the way Jesus taught to kind of back that up. But basically, what we realize is anybody can facilitate a group. And if you listen to the sermon you just heard, it's a whole lot easier to do that. Now, as pastors who are listening, think about this. There's no greater joy as a pastor than to see your people in church on Sunday taking notes during your sermon. And they realize they're not learning for them, Brian. They're now learning for the person they're going to pass on the information to. That's what David Platt told me years ago. When we were meeting, I used to meet with David, and we'd meet at General Tso's Chicken for the Chinese restaurant over General Tso's Chicken, and we'd do pizza at the Italian restaurant, and we met every week. And I'd show up, and I would have a just kind of a stack of napkins first couple weeks, and I'd take notes. You know, he's talking to me about eschatology and, you know, theology and all the expository preaching. I'm taking notes. And like week two, he leans over. He's like, hey, man, you might want to get a notebook. I said, yeah. He said, why? I said, why? He said, because you're going to lose these napkins. I said, that's a great idea. And here's what he said. I've never forgotten this. He said, Robbie, the reality is you're not learning for you. He said, information is stewardship. It's like money and finance. It's stewardship, meaning God gives you information. You're going to be entrusted with information. What I've entrusted to you, pass on to faithful men. That's what Timothy was told by Paul. So what he said is you're not learning for you. He said, you're learning for the guy behind you. So I looked around the restaurant. I'm like, David, like I'm a Christian for like 8 months. There's nobody behind me, dude. I'm not even in seminary. I'm not in ministry yet. He's like, no, here's the thing. One day there will be. And so what he said is, you're learning for the person behind you. So I came up with this line that we use all the time. The gospel came to you because it was heading to someone else. Meaning every person that's listening, you're either fumbling the handoff because the gospel's come to you and you're fumbling it, or you're running with passion through discipling relationships and you're passing it on to the next generation. So that's just a little principle I learned. And that's what we're learning about Long Hollow. When we empower our people to live on mission in their, so then the neighborhood life groups, watch this, become the launching pad for all ministry. Because we do something called neighborhood hangouts. So we try to organize these a couple times a year. Instead of the typical model, whereas you come to our church campus, so we can do, like we used to do at Long Hollow, and this is probably not just to us, but we used to do a 4th of July gathering. We would have, and you probably remember these when they did them, 4,000 community people would come out 4th of July. They would sit on the grounds. We would put together, I think one year we spent like $15,000 on a fireworks
display. It was a great show. It really was.
It was one of the better fireworks shows.
Brian's disappointed that you took it away.
Well, he's not the only one. But the reality is, Brian could tell you, it was like $15,000-$20,000. I don't know what it was, but it was state of the art. And we had food trucks. I mean, Chris, they were just lined up and people loved it, which was awesome. So when I got here, we started thinking, do we do that again? And here's what we found out. How many non-Christians, no offense, were coming to a Christian church to be around Christian people to see a Christian fireworks show, right? So what we said is a better model is let us not do that here. Why don't you go in the community where your people are, shoot fireworks in your driveway, go to the community fire and meet lost people to befriend them for relationships, for open doors down the road for the gospel. Those are the little tweaks we're trying to make in our congregation to show people that the church is not a building, it's a body, and you're the church.
I want to take a second to let you know that this episode of Group Answers is brought to you in partnership with the Christian Standard Bible, a Bible translation created to be accurate, readable, and shareable. You can learn more at csbible.com.
I thought a podcast about how the Bible changed the world would be easy and encouraging. I was wrong. Join me as I explore the overlooked, complicated, and surprising ways God's Word is living and effective. Subscribe on iTunes and learn more at livingandeffective.com.
So here's a question for you. And Chris, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this too. Have you met Dahati Lewis? Do you know Dahati?
Oh, yeah. I know Dahati.
So Dahati's pastor at Blueprint Church in Atlanta. And I think they're divided up where he is into wards or precincts. So you guys are wards in New Orleans, right?
Yes.
So I think Atlanta's the same way.
Yes.
So I was in his office, and just in this idea of just organizing the way you just described, getting into the neighborhoods, and really, I would almost want to use the word infecting the neighborhoods with the gospel through your people. And Robbie, you put that very well. But they had signs. No, that's not what it was. It was like these magnetic boards that you could dry erase on, and they had put everybody's name that had come through their doors on a magnet.
Wow.
And they had put those in those neighborhoods. So all of the magnetic boards were for the different whatever. I don't know if it was boroughs or precincts or wards or if it was just street names or intersections down there. But they had, I guess, a way to track everyone that had come through their doors. And they were assigned to a group or a – I think he may think in terms of more along the line of house churches, which would be different from, I think, the traditional understanding of that.
Yeah.
But Chris, how have you seen churches successfully like go to the neighborhoods like Robbie's describing? And Robbie, I'd be interested in just a little bit more, and I think our listeners would too, about you know how you guys have pulled that off, because I'm sure it remains a work in progress. You learn as you go.
We're still dealing. Yeah, I want to hear Chris, but we're still dealing with some of the repercussions.
You know, some of the more forced models of it way back in the day, Willow Creek kind of pioneered the idea of neighborhood groups, where you kind of what you're talking about, where if you live in this neighborhood, you go to this group. And it's more assigned. You know, if I had a group, I live in Germantown, so if there's a group in Germantown, that's the group I go to. I haven't seen that be that successful, because I just don't think that people always kind of, you know, do life necessarily in their neighborhood. For instance, our neighborhood is mostly 20-somethings, young professionals. We're not young professionals, so if we're going to do life with people, we're going to probably go outside of our neighborhood as far as our group is concerned. So, and I think that that groups happen best when they're more organic, when they're not placed and kind of forced into circles, communities. So that model I haven't seen work that well. That kind of went away. There were a couple books written about it, and then, you know, some churches tried it, but it just didn't work that well. Now, what Robbie is talking about, I think, is more of a missional mindset, being sent out and kind of forming groups. Is that right?
Yeah. And we wouldn't say, like, okay, so the reality is, yes, we're trying to reach neighborhoods, but sometimes the groups members come from other neighborhoods and other parties, like ours. Mm-hmm. We have people spread out. But the reality is, the point of that is to meet in the community where your people are. And I think as our culture, as you know, becomes increasingly obstinate to the gospel and antagonistic to the gospel, antagonistic to church, if you will, millennials, you know, Generation Y, they don't necessarily go to church as the first thing they think of on Sunday. So I think that's a great outreach, and that's how we use it. I will say this, just on your point. I read a book a while back called The Patient Ferment of the Church, which is an interesting book about how the church expanded from Jerusalem when Jesus died and made its way through Asia Minor, Turkey, Greece, Spain, Rome. And what they said is, what happened is, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I heard this statistic and it's kind of changed. But in 100 years after the death of Jesus, the church had so infiltrated Asia Minor that 50 to 60% of people who lived in Turkey, modern day Turkey, professed to be Christians. I've even heard the number be as high as 80%. I think that's exaggerated some, but 50 to 60% would identify with Christianity. Now, within 200 to 300 years, it went back to that same, you know, 10% of the population. Here's why. What happened was, these people went and lived as Christians among lost people and lived in commune with them. They went to the same stores. They went to the same places. They had their kids around the same schools back then. And basically, the greatest apologetic was a changed life. So they saw their life and they said, if that's what Christianity is, I want that. Now, what changed? If you know, in 313 AD, Constantine comes on the scene and he basically creates Roman Catholicism, which becomes an institution. And you have this disconnection, watch this, between the laity and the clergy. You have this progressive disconnection until the Dark Ages. Ages, 600-700 AD, where basically you have this barrier where the only people who do ministry are the trained pastors. We pay those guys, and the people sit idly by and watch. In most churches, and you guys seen this probably more than us, most churches that are declining or plateaued, most of them are because, I would submit, it's the pastor and staff executing all the ministry themselves.
Right.
And pastor, if you're listening, or leader, listen, you have to get to a place where you change the scorecard. And I tell long haul all the time, if you want to judge the success or effectiveness of me as your pastor, it's not how well I can do the ministry. It's not how well I make all the hospital visits or do all the weddings and see you. And your, I mean, I'd love to do those things. In our church, I can't do all those things. But the reality is how well I can come alongside of you and this staff and equip you guys for the God-given ministry and to take responsibility for the ministry God's given you. And when we do that, that's when you start to see growth. And God convicted me years ago about this. I went to Brainerd as a new pastor, Brainerd Baptist Church, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Micah Fries is there now, good friend, doing a great work there. But when I went there, the church was about 800 people, let's say. Traditional church, choir, orchestra, I wore a suit. I know you're not going to believe this, Brian, but I wore a suit for about 3 to 3.5 years. Progressively got out of the suit, no tie July, no coat August, right? But anyway, I basically transitioned the church from seeing themselves as them coming and being consumers, in a sense, of me being the preacher pastor, to them being equippers, equipped to do the work of ministry. Here's how I did it. One of the first Sundays I got up there, I got pressured, like a lot of pastors, to grow a church. Like, it's my job. I got to grow a church. I got to preach sermons. I got to evangelize. And what I was caught up into is escalator evangelism. What I mean by that is this. So I'd say, hey, Brian, so glad you're here. Daniel, you guys are here today. Do you have any friends that you can invite next week?
Yes.
Who's your friend?
Alan Humphreys.
No, you're supposed to say Chris Surratt.
Chris Surratt.
But Alan Humphrey is a good friend. But Chris,
that's right,
yeah. But Chris is a better
friend. He's in my fight club.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Okay. Chris is a better friend. Let's just use Chris. So then next Sunday.
Some ways.
Which is true. Yes.
Yeah.
Are you good friends?
We are good friends.
Yeah. We're co-hosts.
Well, that doesn't mean it.
I mean, we do all things together.
77 to be exact. Okay. So, but here's the thing. I wouldn't say this to you week two when you come back to church, but I would think this internally. I've already overlooked you guys to get to you guys. And so I'd ask you, hey, Chris, so glad you're here. Man, we're great, grateful you're here. Do you have any friends? Yeah, we got friends. Who's your friend? Give me a friend.
David.
David. So next week, David comes here. Now watch this. Week two. Now we're on week three, okay?
Yeah.
Who's David, by the way?
I don't know.
Okay. Just made it up. Okay, that's good. That's good. The fictitious David.
I don't have any friends beside Brian.
Okay. There you go. That's a whole other podcast. But anyway, so here's what we've done.
Off the rails.
Yeah, no, that's what we love getting off the rails. But the reality is, week three, watch this. I've overlooked you, Brian, to get to Chris, and I've overlooked you to get to Dan. What is his name again?
David.
I've overlooked you to get David. I've already forgotten. But here's the thing. People were going out of our church as fast out the back door as they were coming in the front door. And God just convicted my heart. And I thought, and this is what I felt like in prayer, Robbie, you can change the city of Chattanooga if you just take these people and grow them deep in the Word of God. And if you, watch this, if you focus on the depth of your people, I'll grow the breadth of your ministry. Mm. That is radically different than what we're taught in school and radically different today, because what we're taught in school is you grow the breadth of the ministry. You let people worry about the depth of themselves. If they want to grow, it's up to them. If they want to be in a life group, up to them. Who cares? You want to read your Bible? Up to them. And I think we've taught half the gospel, in a sense. We have taught people what they're saved from, but we haven't helped them see what they're saved for. That's why groups are not optional. It's essential, right, to be in a group. Right. How else will you apply the sermon? How else will you learn how to pray? How else are you going to learn how to read the Bible? So what the Lord showed me, which was the aha moment of my ministry, you get people to grow and fall in love with me, and they can't help but not talk about me. Because here's the thing, what goes in the mind comes out the mouth. Mm. When Jesus is on the mind, he'll come out your mouth.
That's good. I have a practical question for you, because you said when you got to Long Hollow, it was mostly on campus, more of a Sunday school kind of mindset. And I talked to a lot of churches that are there and they can't figure out how to do what you're talking about, getting them off campus into homes. You know, the mindset is, you know, we're comfortable where we are. So I just want to know, have you had success of moving the people from on campus, or is this and. So you're a part of a life group on campus, but we also want you to do this off campus. Is it a whole different set of people? What does that look like for you to transition from more of a Sunday school mindset?
That's the question we get asked a lot. And the answer is yes, all the above. So what I've learned is, here's a great insight for young leaders or young pastors or just someone new, young in the ministry where they're at. Young leaders suffer from two problems. They overestimate what can be done in the short term, but they underestimate what God can do over the long haul. And so what happens is you come into a new ministry and you're tempted to change and just flip the apple cart over and start over. And what I realized a long time ago, how do you deal with a stump in your backyard? You ever try to have a stump? You're like, man, this big old tree we cut down is a stump. There's two ways to deal with a stump. You can either blow it up with a grenade or dynamite, and it will get away. You go away, but you have a lot of shrapnel and you have a lot of mess to pick up. Or you just mow around it. Okay, if I just mow around it, it doesn't bother me. In the church, you're going to have some stumps. These are precious souls, Brian, for whom Christ died, as we like to call, right? And they're not going to be early adopters. They're not even going to be mid adopters. So what I found, it's a whole lot easier to start something new than to resurrect something from old. Okay, so as Stetzer used to say, is it easier to birth a baby or resurrect the dead? I find it's a whole lot easier to birth babies. So what we do is we give options that become so attractive to people, and they say, man, is that what's happening in the home? And so it's kind of a reverse engineering process. So here's what we made a commitment of. We would not start any more on-campus groups. Again, so when we came to Long Hollow, no more on-campus groups. 2015, that was it. And back then, we didn't have the space, so it was easier. Mm. But literally 2 weeks ago, there was just I just heard about a meeting with my life group leader, and he had a meeting with a lady who was very mad because we just told her she had to go off campus because we needed the room for something, and they were very upset about this. But this is 3 years in, okay? Now, because her response was, we have groups. Mm. I mean, we have rooms. Why are we not meeting in these rooms? But what my life group leader, Mike, you know Mike, and yeah. Mike said, here's the reality. It goes against the mission of our church, which is to make disciples who make disciple makers of all nations. And part of nations is our neighborhood. So yes, we can continue to grow here, which eventually run out of room, or we can be a part of the compelling mission to equip you to be a disciple so you can do that in your neighborhood. So what I would say is, yes, we made a conscious effort. The second thing is we restructured the groups and we started to get them off campus by leading by example. Here's what we found out. When we got to Long Hollow, guess how many of our senior staff, okay? Or put it this way, guess how many of our staff in general, okay? At Long Hollow, we have about 100 staff members. I asked the question when I first got here. I said, how many of you as a staff are in a life group? Not even in the home, but just how many of you are generally in a life group? Guess how many, Brian? Guess what percentage?
Percentage, I will go with 57%.
Ooh, that is a good number.
See, I would say less than 50.
25%, okay? Now, this is no indictment for my staff. I would say, Pastor, ask your staff the same question. Yep. And here's the principle. You can't expect from others as a senior leader something you're not going to do yourself.
Right.
I mean, we know that. I mean, with groups, you guys talk about all the time. You can't expect your people to be in a group if you're not in a group. So we lead by example. And then what happens is, as a pastor, I'm able to season my sermons with examples from my life group. Mm. So I'll say, hey, like, and here's another thing. We just did a serve the community day. We called it Love Our City Day. You may have heard about this. We did this 2 weeks ago. We mobilized over 1,000 people from life groups. See, the life groups, again, are the ministry arm of the church. And once you get the life groups right, then they start to become, once you get the pathway right, we talk about this a lot, replicate the pathway right, they mobilize. Mm-hmm. We launched our people to go serve the city. It was over 1,000 people served. We served 71 different places, wow. Schools. Okay, so I'll give you one example. Our group went to a ministry called Next Door, which is a transitional home for single moms, yep. Some out of prison. And so we went there as a group. And what happened was, and this is what's so cool about doing missions as a group, what happens is the church's job for missions is to put your people in an environment where they can act different. This is what's so cool about local missions. Because most people won't go to Africa. They're not going to go to Indonesia next week. But they'll go down the street. They'll go to a school. Okay, so we put them in an environment to act different. And one lady came up to us and said, hey, can you provide coats for my son? He's 4. I have no coats. I have no money to take care of him. I said, sure. Give me your number. We'll take care of you. Well, some of the ladies in the group heard that. Came back in our life group the next week. Here's what they said. I didn't prime them or pump, say, you got to do this. They said, hey, could we not organize a Christmas gathering Because if they don't have coats, they probably don't have Christmas gifts. And our kids, we have so much. Could we not take our life group and the three we've already launched, because we've already launched three over five, over 3 years, and the four of us come together, we get the names of every kid, and we go and give them gifts with our kids for Christmas. I said, I love that. Here's what I thought. That was something that happened organically out of something we did structurally. And that's what we see. When the ministry becomes something we don't organize, that's when it becomes a movement. Yeah. When the people take ownership for it. So
that's good.
And it happened out of a group.
Yeah.
So you guys at Long Hollow, you reference your life group. You have the life group, and then you have your D groups in addition to that, right?
Yeah.
So as you guys are in and out of all these churches, and Robbie, you're on the road a lot, and in front of a lot of groups and in a lot of conversations, you've got another one this afternoon with a, well, I guess in a matter of minutes, with a fairly influential church in San Diego. What are some of the fresh approaches or things that, you know, that I've given you pause, I want to say, or that you've noticed that you've said, hey, that's really innovative.
That people are doing?
Yeah.
In groups?
Yeah. Well, groups, but the larger context of disciple making.
Okay, what I'm excited about in the area of discipleship now is that we have more people talking about making disciples at this time than I've only been a Christian 15 years, but for the past 15 years. Because when I used to talk discipleship, people would look at me like I'm crazy. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? Or they'd say, I do discipleship. It's Sunday school. I had a lady tell me that in Orlando one time. I preached for the whole weekend on discipleship. She came after. I'd preached three times. I had one more time to preach. She said, hey, pastor, she's like in her 70s. She said, I know discipleship's new to you because you've only been a Christian for about 10 or 12 years. She said, but we've been doing it for the last 50 years here at our church. I said, really? What do you call it? She said, Sunday school. I said, man, wow. I said, well, let me ask you a question. I said, how many groups have you replicated or repurposed and started or multiplied into new groups? She said, none. We've been meeting with our group for 50 years. And I said, man, with all due respect, thank God the first century disciples didn't do that. I mean, think about this. Because they had every reason, Chris, to stay. I mean, you got to think. Every week they hear Peter. Man, Peter's such a prophetic preacher. He steps on our steel-toed sandals. We love Peter. And then John, golly, he preaches. He's emotional and he cries every sermon. If they had any reason to justify staying, those original 11 could have. Yep. But thank God, watch this. They knew the value of multiplication and replication. Why? Because we're here today because of them. And if they wouldn't have had that mindset of giving the ministry away, the gospel came to them because it was heading to someone else. And I think if we just get people to see that, whatever you're in a group, a Sunday school, a life group, off campus, on campus group, the reality is you should be always discipling someone in your group.
Church planner leading in a multi-site church or an established church pastor wanting to grow and multiply your church, this podcast is for you.
When you're leading,
we would like to thank the professor, Robbie Gowdy, for being with us today and making time. I know you've got a lot going on with Long Hollow and Replicate and lots of other things. That's
farming.
Farming.
Goats.
That's going to wrap it up for episode 77. And as always, I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Stratt. So we have something we're going to do different here. We've got giveaways of Foundation's New Testament, which is the most recent release from Robbie and Candy Gallaty. And this is the follow-up to Foundation's. And this is what every D group uses at Long Hollow, right?
Actually, every person in our church we encourage to read this, but the D groups use this Bible reading plan and talk about it. And this is not even out yet. So you guys, I don't even know how you got this.
Well, when this hits, it will be out.
We know
that's
people.
That's true. So but you got it now before it hits.
Yes. So you can go to your local Lifeway. We're sitting in a Lifeway store. I don't know if we mentioned that. We're in Hendersonville. We're in a Lifeway store. You can go to your local Lifeway store or online, lifeway.com, and get this today. Hmm.
And this has been something as a part of your work with the disciple-making task force with the Southern Baptist Convention, and that those conversations, that team, this format, if you will, has emerged from that. So the leading indicator of discipleship is
Bible engagement.
Bible
and
engagement.
This is the answer to the deficit of discipleship in our convention.
So, Chris, how many do we have to give away?
We have 5 to give away. So it will give some people in the store right now and maybe online. So if you hit us up, hit me at Twitter, at Chris Surratt, and maybe we'll pick one or two we'll send to you.
How about we do this? How about someone that gives us a rating on iTunes?
Ooh, I like that.
I don't know how we'd get in touch with them.
Well, just send me, just tweet at us. Just say, hey, I just left a a rating and
we
a
will
comment,
get you a Foundations New Testament. Yep. And this is an excellent resource, and it's something that you can use. You, like Robbie said, everybody uses it, but it's also something that they discuss in their D group. So it can be a foundational tool for disciple making. So Robbie, again, thanks. Chris,
always.
We'll be back for episode 78. God willing.
Yep.